is Jack, and I am still an alcoholic, and I don't know if you've gotten any kind of indication, but maybe I need to say that I really do love Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, I really do. I am indeed one of those who came to scoff and remained to pray, and what a difference that makes. You know, I certainly treated God as a pinch hitter. You know, when my back was against the wall and I had everything that I could humanly do to get myself out of a jam had happened, I was more than willing then to cry out to God. And as I look back over my life, every 911 prayer I ever lifted up was answered. But as soon as the crisis had passed, I would give myself credit for being slick and smart and cool, and I'll never do that again. You know, and take charge again of my life. And I found out here things are so much easier when I call on God first instead of last. And that is my understanding of the essence of the 10th step. For the longest time, I used to sit in Fellowship Hall and I used to look at the steps on the wall and it said, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. And I thought that was the 10th step. Of course, I was wrong. I know that here in this part of the world, you guys all announce your sobriety dates when you introduce yourself, and I think it's good to have a sobriety date, and I have one. But I must say that that's not the most important day of my life. The most important day of my life is mentioned in the 10th step in the big book, and I cannot tell you what day that is. In the big book, it says in step 10, it says, we've entered the world of the Spirit. And I wish I could tell you that was some day certain and some year certain, but I can't. But I can tell you without hesitation or reservation that as a result of the action that I have taken on the first 9 steps of this program, that indeed I did enter the world of the Spirit on a day which I did not know. And God came into my life in a way in which He had never come into my life before. And it's that consciousness of God's presence in my life that makes all the difference in the world. And that happens in the 10th step. And it says, our function then is to grow in understanding and to grow in effectiveness. To grow in understanding of this program and its application in my life and the effectiveness of transmitting this to other alcoholics who still suffer. You know, my very purpose for being was outlined in the 8th step. And this is a question I ask myself all my life. You know, why was I born? Why am I still here? Why am I alive? And it says our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. I didn't sign up for that. I didn't sign up to be a seeker of God. Man, if I'd have made a list of what I wanted to achieve in Alcoholics Anonymous, I would have really sold myself short. Way short. In the 10th step, you know, we're given a 4-part solution to daily life in terms of what comes up right now in front of me. You know, it says, when I find myself becoming angry, or I'm find myself becoming consumed with fear, or I find myself being resentful or about to break out in a rash of selfishness, it says there are 4 things that I should do. The very first thing that I should do is to call on God. Now, by nature, that is my absolute last thing to do. But this program suggests that become my first line of defense, to ask God to take this thing from me, to talk with an understanding person about it, i.e. my sponsor, preferably. But if not my sponsor, then another understanding person in Alcoholics Anonymous. The third thing is, if I have harmed somebody, to make amends quickly. One more time, I would say it could be 6 months to 6 years for some of us. But I found the quicker I do it, the easier it is. And then the last thing that it says in the 10th step, which I think is as important as the first thing, is to resolutely turn my thinking, my thoughts, to what I can do to help another person. Another alcoholic, another suffering human being. You know, I do that, and I'm going to be all right. Because it is all about me. Selfishness and self-centeredness is the root cause of my difficulty in living. Alcoholism is about living life to good order, not drinking. And I never knew how to do that before I got here. And so it wasn't until I learned to live, to actually live and enjoy life. You know, in the book it says we're not a glum lot. We absolutely insist on enjoying life. And Ken gave me one of those little yellow smiley faces on a pen, and on it it said, you know, a button. And it said, lighten up. What's that all about? What's your point, Ken? Because life was way too serious. I mean, you cannot be frivolous in life, said I. And you know what I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous? That if I'm willing to laugh at myself, I will never lack for amusement. I am one of the funniest people I know. I mean, I do the dumbest stuff. I just do this stuff. And you would think that, you know, somebody who's my age ought to know better. And I find out that I got a chronologically aging body and I got an adolescent child trying to grow up inside of it. That's all. I may have come here and my age emotionally may have been 12 when I got here, and I might be 15 or 16 now. And I'm learning and growing. And so the 10th step is a lot more than promptly admitting wrongs. But let's say I don't do a real good job today on the 10th step. Maybe I miss a couple opportunities. What is suggested in the 11th step? And I understand that the 10th step and the 11th step, when woven together, provide a safety net that will protect me in any circumstance. Well, it's suggested that I improve my conscious contact with God. Well, that presumes I have a conscious contact with God. And it presumes it because if we do 1 through 9, we get it. We get it. Now, some of us may become more powerful than others. It may grow over time, but that's not the issue. This is an absolute guarantee. Improve your conscious contact with God, Jack. How do I do that? Prayer and meditation. Okay. Well, what do I pray for? You pray for knowledge of His will for you and the power to carry it out. That's it. Well, I don't know how to meditate. I've never done any meditating. Well, we had a suggestion here in the book. It says that you can call upon your priest or minister or rabbi. They can give you several helpful books or suggestions about a good prayer. We just don't take direction very well. We really don't. And so when they wrote that 12 and 12, they put a prayer in there for us. You know, they put the prayer of St. Francis in there for those of us who had neglected to ask our pastor or our priest or our rabbi. They said, here's a prayer for you, Jack. Well, what am I going to do with this? Well, you're going to read it, Jack. Okay. Now what do? Read it again, slowly, savoring every word and its meaning. What is that? That's called meditation, Jack. Some guy's guide to recovery, right here in the big book. They write it down here on a piece of paper. Do this, Jack. This is what you do. Well, okay, now let's see. I'm going to bed tonight. What is it that I should do? Well, Jack, when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Oh, okay. Not destructively, constructively. All right? How about if I don't die tonight, what do I do when I wake up in the morning? Good question. Upon awakening, let us consider the 24 hours ahead. Ask God, 11-step prayer, to direct my thinking that be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. I think the 3rd-step prayer fits that bill. I offer myself to you to build with me and to do with me as you see fit. That sounds like surrender to me. Relieve me of the bondage of self. Why? So I can better do thy will. Take away my difficulties. Now, I like that part. I always wanted that part. I want you to take away my difficulties so I can have a great life. Is that what the prayer is? No, it's not. is take away my difficulties, so victory over those difficulties will bear witness to you or those that I would help of God's power, God's love, and God's way of life. Different motive, better result. May I do thy will always. I think that's pretty much divorced from self-pity, self-seeking, and dishonest motives. You want to do another prayer? That's okay. But the guys I sponsor, once you pray the third step prayer, I suggest that you pray it every morning upon awakening. Not after you've had your first cigarette. Not after you've had your first cup of coffee. Not after you've been to the bathroom. And if you're my age, going to the bathroom can be really important at that upon awakening place. But do it upon awakening. Why? Because I have an alcoholic mind. And my mind's trying to kill me. And if it didn't need my body for transportation, it would have killed me a long time ago. And many times my mind wakes up. My mind wakes up long before I do. And my eyes come open, my mind's right there. Hey, Jack, you know that case you got? You're going to get screwed. You know what's going to happen in that case? Your client's going down. You're going to look like a fool. You haven't filed this motion. You haven't done that. I offer myself to you to do with me and to build with me. Why would I do that? Because it takes my mind to a different thought plane. I didn't know that you could do that. I didn't know that. I thought if you woke up on the wrong side of the bed, it was downhill after that. I had no idea that you could start your day over at any time, and I had no idea that waking up on the wrong side of the bed just meant my mind had woke up before me and had started the meeting before I got there. That's all. Well, how about as I go through the day, I may be facing indecision. What happens with that? Oh, well, we got something here. We ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought or a decision. Relax. We take it easy. We don't struggle. There you got it, guys. What to do tonight when I go to bed? If I don't die tonight, what to do when I wake up? And as I go through my day-to-day, when faced with indecision or fear or whatever, I've got a solution for that right here. Right here. I know you all know this. That in 164 it says, if my relationship with God is right, that great events will come to pass for me and countless others. I'm telling you, this is the greatest way to live. I could not imagine it. I got retired from being a judge because of the injuries that I received in that explosion. And so I practiced law for a while, and I guess it gets pretty cold here in Omaha sometimes during the winter time. It was really cold in Hagerstown. And I saw an ad in a newspaper that said, be a lawyer in paradise. And the Republic of Palau, which is a little country out in the Western Pacific, was looking for assistance attorneys general. And when I went to the International in San Diego in 95, while I was out there, I was invited to come to the embassy of Palau in D.C. to talk to them about their job. And when I got there, they said that their attorney general had determined that he wasn't going to renew his contract and would I be interested in talking to them about being the attorney general of their country. And I said, well, does it pay more than the assistants? And they said that it did. So I said, well, let's talk about it. So we talked about it. But they wanted me to come to work by the 1st of September. They wanted somebody to come by the 1st of September, and I couldn't do that. Now, I've been active in the American Bar Association and their lawyer assistance program, and there had been a request made by the Nebraska Bar Association that somebody come to Lincoln, Nebraska to the annual meeting of the Nebraska Bar to talk about lawyer assistance programs and encouraging the Nebraska Bar to adopt a program and hire an executive director. And so the inducement to do that for me was to come to a Nebraska football game, and I said I would come, fly out on Thursday, speak on Friday, go to the game on Saturday, go home on Sunday. But no sooner did I make that commitment to come here to speak to the Nebraska Bar Association than I got a call from the embassy of Palau asking my wife and I to come to New York to meet with the president of Palau at the United Nations. He was going to be there on the very Sunday that I was traveling back from Nebraska. So that put the spike in the football game for me, but I still had to honor my commitment to come out here to speak to the Bar Association, and so I did. And I'm sitting down there at that Cornhusker Hotel with the Grand Poobahs of the Nebraska Bar Association, and my host says to the guy across the table, don't we have somebody from the Nebraska Law School faculty out in the Republic of Palau? And the dean of the Nebraska Law School said, yes, Peter Huffman from our faculty is on the Supreme Court of Palau. Why do you ask? And my host said, well, Jack's going to New York on Sunday to talk to the president of Palau about being the attorney general. And the dean said, I think Peter is over at the law school this afternoon. Why don't we, after lunch, call over there and see if we can get him on the phone and you can talk to him. So after lunch and before my talk, we did call the law school, and yes, Associate Justice Peter Huffman of the Supreme Court of Palau was in Lincoln, Nebraska on the only day I'd ever been in Lincoln, Nebraska. So on my way home, I called my wife from Chicago, and she said, how did the talk go? I said, the talk went really well, but that's not why I was in Lincoln, Nebraska. I mean, what do you think the odds are of an Associate Justice of the Supreme Court of the Republic of Palau being here on the only day I was here? By the way, they hired Rick Allen, and he's been employed ever since. So, I mean, for those of you that know Rick, he runs the Lawyer Assistant Program for the state of Nebraska, and he's beholden to me forever. So, we agreed that I would go out to the Republic of Palau. I closed my law office, and Ann and I went up to New York. We met with the people from the Republic of Palau. They offered me the job, and I was named Attorney General of a country. Now, you may ask yourself, how does an alcoholic judge from Western Maryland get to be the Attorney General of a country? And I tell you, I answered a newspaper ad. I don't know how it's going to work out for you. I called New York and I asked them, you got any meetings in the Republic of Palau? And they said, no, we got meetings in Guam. That's 2 hours by jet from Palau. And I thought that was a little bit much. But they said they'd send me a box of stuff. They got a starter kit, everything you need to have to start a meeting in a small country or a small town. And so I went off to the Republic of Palau with my AA starter kit. They are the second highest consumer of Anheuser-Busch products in the world, so we suspected there was fertile field there. I got to Palau, and I found out about a guy who was there from Annapolis, Maryland, named Bill, and he might have something to do with AA. We didn't know. So the very first telephone call I made as the Attorney General of the Republic of Palau was to Bill, and Bill answered the phone, and I said, are you a friend of Bill W.'s? And he said, yes, I am. I said, are there any meetings here in Palau? He said, yes, there are. He said, we meet at the National Hospital on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And I said, you didn't tell New York. He said, I didn't know I had to tell New York. I said, well, no, you don't have to, but it'd be helpful, you know, for a guy who might be looking for a meeting. So he said, well, we're meeting tonight. You know, why don't you come up? So it's 7:30, National Hospital. Now, when you're going to the first time to a new meeting, you want to dress right. I mean, you want to make an impression, right? You want to look good. And I had packed up all of my AA t-shirts, and I had them laid out on the bed, and I had a lot of them, and I couldn't really decide which one to wear, and I had a black one that said, first things first. And now, you do not wear black in a tropical climate. You just don't do that. And so I'm looking at the white shirts, and this little black shirt's over there going, wear me, wear me, wear me. I don't want to wear me. Okay. So I put it on, and I drove up to the National Hospital, and I found the meeting. And there were 3 Americans there and 4 Palauans, and they welcomed me to the First Things First group of Karora Palau. I love it when God does a bank shot just to show off. Just to let me know that He's there. I stand before you this afternoon as the deposed Attorney General of the Republic of Palau. I arrested the Deputy Chief of the National Police Force and charged him with a number of alcohol and methamphetamine-related crimes. He was the lifelong friend of the president and his hand-picked appointee to be deputy chief. I think I would have survived that, but About 10 days later, I arrested my immediate superior, the Minister of Justice, and charged him with conspiracy to traffic in drugs and obstruction of justice. And he, too, was a lifelong friend of the president. And, of course, as a cabinet member, he is appointee. And so my wife and I were invited to return to Hagerstown, which we did. So I don't know why I went, I don't know why I was there, and I don't know why I came back, but I know God had everything to do with it. Because believe me, it was not my plan to go to the Republic of Palau. And there were many more God shots in that whole episode that I could tell you about, but time doesn't permit. But it says in our book, great events will come to pass for you and countless others, and I think that was a great event. About 18 years ago on October the 12th, a guy came before me in court for his third drunk driving, and I sentenced him to 3 years in the Division of Correction. And they took him out of my courtroom, and as he left the courtroom, I told the bailiff, don't send him on, just leave him in the holding cell for the balance of the day and bring him back at the end of the docket. And so they brought him back at the end of the docket, and we talked about his last drink, and we talked about October the 12th. On October the 12th, Columbus discovered a new world. And I told him, maybe you can discover a new way of life. And I suspended 2 years and 9 months of that sentence and gave him 90 days to serve so that he would be sober in the Washington County Jail during the holiday season. And I also sentenced him to 5 years of active supervised probation, 5 AA meetings a week. And he got out of jail, and he fulfilled the conditions of his probation. And as soon as his probation ended, he no longer had to go to 5 AA meetings a week. He started going to 7. In 2003, I found out that I was going to have bypass surgery. And so, you know, when they tell you that, they don't give you a lot of time to get your affairs in order. In fact, I think I found out on a Wednesday, and on Thursday the state AA convention started and Dick was there. And Dick says, how are things going, Jack? I said, they were going pretty good till yesterday. And he says, what's the problem? I said, I'm going to have bypass surgery. And he unbuttons his shirt and he shows me his scar. And he proceeds to tell me all about bypass surgery. And the last thing he told me was a bold-faced lie. He told me it doesn't hurt. And I believed him. And I spent Thursday and Friday and Saturday and Sunday morning at that convention. And Sunday was good. It was Father's Day, and there's nothing that brings the kids home on Father's Day like bypass surgery. And they all came home. Monday night my group was to meet, and Monday I had to get my office closed up for about 6 or 8 weeks so I could do this thing, and this guy John calls me on the phone, the very same guy who got sober on Columbus Day. And I said, what's up, John? I don't think John's ever called me on the phone. And he said, well, you know, Nancy and I are getting married. And I said, yes, I'd heard that. He said, we're going to get married July 5th. I said, good, that's great. He said, I need to ask you something. And I said, what's that? And he said, well, Nancy and I have been praying and who to ask to be the best man at our wedding. And we decided to ask the man who's had the greatest impact on my life. I said, who's that, Chuck? He said, that's you, Jack. Would you be my best man? I said, John, you're going to make me cry. I said, I'm having bypass surgery tomorrow. I said, I don't know that I'll be available on July the 5th. He said, we'll put you down as a definite maybe. When you get out of the hospital, we'll talk to you about it. When I sentenced that man to 3 years in the Division of Correction and brought him back and suspended the sentence and ordered him to AA, he wasn't thinking about getting sober in Alcoholics Anonymous and getting married and asking me to be his best man. But that's a great event that came to pass in my life as a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous. Some of you have been to Akron, and you know what goes on at Akron at Founders Day. And I had the dormitory package, and I was living in the dorm, and it says that you know, you got to get down there early because they trashed that bathroom, and I got down there early, and guy comes through the door and he says, "Hi, I'm Woody from Baltimore." I said, "Oh, I'm Jack from Hagerstown." He said, "Well, I come to Hagerstown all the time." I said, "I figured he's a truck driver." I said, "What do you come to Hagerstown for, Woody?" He said, "Oh, me and my sponsor," he says, "we bring a meeting up to that prison up there once a month." I said, "I'm embarrassed, Woody." He said, "What do you mean?" I said, "I live 10 miles from that prison. I don't know a single person that takes a meeting in there." He said, "Really? Would you like to come with us?" "Well, you know, I'd really like to talk to you about that, Woody, but I got to get back to my room. And maybe we could talk about it later." And I ran down the hall and got into my room, told Glenn. I said, "What happened?" He said, "Did you give him your phone number?" I said, "No." He says, "There's 15,000 people here, Jack. He'll never find you." I felt good about that. Now, have you ever been to Akron? You know, when you go in that feeding plan, they take you in this dining hall, they send you through like eight lines of buffet lines, but they bring you back into one line, and they shoot you down. They got these long, long tables lined up, and you go down this side of the table, fill in every chair. You don't get to pick the chair you sit in. You just go, 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 go. And now they start sending them down this side. Now they're coming down this side. And Glenn and I, we've had a couple of meals now, and I'm wondering who's going to sit across from us. Woody. Not to the right, not to the left. In the chair, right in front of me. And Woody says, "That's the guy! That's the guy that wants to take meetings into the prison!" And so I began to take meetings into the prison. And believe me, it was not my idea. But once again, I recognize God when He moves in my life. In the first meeting I attended as a retired circuit court judge, the guy who chaired the meeting was a guy I'd put in prison. He was still working on a little bit of resentment. He was surprised to see me there. I wasn't surprised to see him. He was... Second meeting, the guy sat next to me I'd put in prison, but he really didn't care because he'd gotten paroled and put his own self back in prison, so he really wasn't angry at me. He was angry at him. But unfortunately, the Maryland Division of Correction has determined that Alcoholics Anonymous is not an effective treatment modality. And so at the present time, I'm not taking meetings into the prison. But hopefully someday somebody will figure out that instead of having to pay $15 million for a treatment modality that doesn't work, that AA is for free. And isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? I mean, if you really want interested, you can go to the Betty Ford Center and pay them $30,000. But you know what they're going to tell you? Go to AA. You want to go to Father Martin's, Ashley, be my guest. He'll probably charge you $22,000, $24,000. And then what they go tell you? Go to AA. Hazleton, same thing. Jail Substance Abuse Program in Hagerstown, same thing. Go to AA. It's free. It's for free and for fun. Great events come to pass for you and countless others. The longer I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous, the less I know. But I do know this. I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous today because somebody prayed. Maybe more than one somebody prayed. My wife prayed. Our kids prayed. My mother, who does not think I am an alcoholic, however, thought I was crazy. "Please, somebody help my son. I'm here because somebody prayed." And if you're here this afternoon and you're alcoholic like I'm alcoholic, make no mistake about it. You're here because somebody prayed. I don't care if you believe that or not. It's not necessary for you to believe it. I know it to be a fact. You are here because somebody prayed. Most alcoholics die never hearing of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we're here. Here's something else that I'm aware of or know for a fact today. I know that this group of people assembled in this room this afternoon have never been assembled before in the history of the world. And we will never be assembled together again. And our book says that there is one who has all power, that one is God. May you find him now. And if you're new here, and you're wondering whether or not you belong here, if you have ever sat on the side of your bed and wondered if you have a problem with alcohol, you're in the right place. Because people who don't have a problem with alcohol never wonder if they have a problem with alcohol. It just doesn't come up. It is a lot better to be in here by mistake than out there by mistake. Because out there we die. In here there is absolutely nothing that's intended to cause me harm or pain. Any pain that I've ever experienced in Alcoholics Anonymous has been a direct result of my resistance to the program of recovery. It has never been because of the program of recovery. Now, if you're not new here, I mean, if you're used here and you're coming back, you know, get a sponsor, get a home group, do the deal. What do you got to lose? You know, what do you got to lose? If you're here and you're not happy, joyous, and free today, and you've been away from drinking for a long time, but you just, you know, your life's not working the way you'd like it to work, get with your sponsor. Find out what it is that you're not doing, or find out what it is that you're doing that you shouldn't be doing. Because it says in our book that this thing will render us happily and usefully whole. That's a promise. That's a guarantee. It's like a warranty. Jack, you come here, you do what we do, you'll get what we got, and you'll be happy, joyous, and free. I know that. I know that for a fact today. We have this pamphlet called A Member's Eye View of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I hope you're all familiar with it. If you're not familiar with it, I hope you become familiar with it. I think it's the greatest piece of AA literature we have outside of the big book. That's my opinion. I would encourage you to read it, and then you can decide for yourself. But let me read something at the very end of this pamphlet. Pamphlet says, "This coming Sunday, in the churches of many of us, there will be read that portion of the Gospel of Matthew, which recounts the time when John the Baptist was languishing in the prison of Herod. And hearing of the works of his cousin Jesus, he sent two of his disciples to say to him, 'Art thou he who is to come, or shall we look for another?' And Christ did as he so often did. He did not answer them directly, but wanted John to decide for himself. So he said to the disciples, 'Go and report to John what you have heard and what you have seen. The blind see, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead rise, and the poor have the gospel preached to them.'" Back in my childhood catechism days, I was taught that the poor in this instance did not mean only the poor in a material sense, but also meant the poor in spirit. Those who burned with an inner hunger and an inner thirst. And that the word gospel meant, quite literally, the good news. A number of years ago, two men, Ken and Bob, working singularly and together, maneuvered me into Alcoholics Anonymous. If they were here this afternoon and they would say to me, "Jack, tell us what you found," I would have to say to them what I now say to you. I can tell you only what I have heard and seen. It seems the blind do see, the lame do walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead rise, and over again, in the middle of the longest day or the darkest night, the poor in spirit have the good news told to them. God grant that it may always be so. My name is Jack. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is April the 7th, 1982. Thank you for letting me share.